I always go right there on the fringe of rifle season. Sometimes I even go in rifle season because the neighboring properties are all bang, bang, pow, pow, and it just drives more deer into where I'm hunting. But it's prime time rut is the rifle season, so it's a very sought-after tag.
To everybody listening, bows are, you know, there isn't anybody out there that says, hey, just take an offhand shot at 300 with the old rifle you got there, buddy.
Yep.
Everybody's telling you to get a rest because it works. And bow and arrows are completely offhand. None of us do the same thing human to human. And I think that we should be listening to the greatest shooters in the world, but we should also accept our own humanity.
Right.
And try to make ourselves as good as we can for the average shot bow hunting. When you shoot at a quartering two animal, the first thing you need to understand is you're going to not have a blood trail. You need to assume that responsibility as a bow hunter. This is the facts about broadheads. Broadheads either remain static state or they erode. There is no sharper when it hits something.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place, my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. It doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primo's calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember Double Bull blinds, but that's a Primo's product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots, or you know, using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com. Use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode.
Are y'all going to a good area in North Dakota?
South Dakota, but yes.
South Dakota?
I have land that I lease there, so I run guided hunts off of it. This will be my second year running guided hunts, but it'll be my fourth year hunting that land myself. Yeah, I hunted it twice. Hunted it 2 years in a row for myself. I shot a whitetail and then a pretty good muley. And then last year... Oh, sorry. No, that's my fifth year. And then I had 1 year, the first year that I took somebody else there to hunt, Charles, my buddy. Mm-hmm. I did not get one.
Are y'all spotting stalking or hunting them over fields or trees or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Whatever works.
Whatever works.
Yeah,
I
we
like
usually
that way better.
Yeah, it's honestly the most magical place I've ever hunted in my life because everything works. You want to stand hunt them, you can stand them. You want to spot and stalk. You want to call them, you want to rattle them in, you want to decoy them. Everything goes, man. And I've done it all.
Well, the older I get, and I miss this because I never really had a hunting mentor for out west stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Or we always hunt in the stands. And everybody hunts it, and they're towards some of the properties aren't very big, so it's not practical to march around, right?
Right.
So you just don't think to do it. But that big country stuff, you got to be... You need to be ready for everything because anything can happen. Or you just sit there and watch the same deer go over the same hill at the same time every day. And if you're an Indian, you go up there and sit by that rock and let him walk by you. But we don't do it that way.
Yeah. That's what I do.
We're not hungry enough.
That's the way I did it, actually. So the year that I went home empty-handed, I have this spot. I just know, like, year in, year out, these deer, they come funneling down this drainage, coming out of this creek bottom to come out to these ag fields. It's alfalfa fields right there. And I know if I sit up one of these little, like, tributary cuts, and I could slide up and down it, like, you know, go up higher in elevation, drop down lower in elevation, mm-hmm. I usually could create myself an opportunity. I've done it before. I passed on several deer from there. Anyway, it was the last day of the hunt, and whiffed it on a good buck like 2 days earlier. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go sit over there. I know I'm going to have a shot opportunity. Well, it's always cold in South Dakota, but it's stupid cold. It was stupid cold that day. So I was dressed up like Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, you know, every freaking layer that I had with me on. So I was real restricted to begin with, but I was still cold. Like, it was bad because it was windy and like misty rain.
Mm-hmm.
It was brutal. And I was sitting in the snow on top of it because it had snowed the day before. So I'm just sitting there. Finally, I actually fell asleep for about a half an hour. Like,
yeah, of course.
Waiting. Just because I knew I got to slip. You get this spot, you got to slip in there about noon. And then about 3 o'clock, everything starts coming out past you, right?
Yep.
So I got in there about noon and I fell asleep. And then I'm like, oh my God. I fell asleep and I look over my shoulder and I'm looking across, you know, over the top of the berm that I'm sitting behind. And I'm like, I see a couple of does feeding. I'm like, all right, here we go. It's game time already, you know? Mm-hmm. And these does just kind of start feeding my way. And I'm like, all right, man, they're going to come right to me. They're going to be live decoys. Beautiful. I got a little group of willows. I call them willows, but they're not really willows. I don't know what kind of trees, little saplings below me. And that the bucks, for some reason, they always stop right there and rub their antlers on it before they head out. That's also another reason why I picked that spot. Anyway, I'm going to try to shorten the story up. So I look over my shoulder and I see a buck up the drainage. And I know he's coming. He's going to come check these does. He's going to come. So yep. He finally gets to me. Now it's, I don't know what time it is, but it's probably about an hour before dark. And I am shaking like a leaf because I'm so cold.
Ugh.
And a bunch of other stuff happens, but he finally steps out and he gives me a shot at 20 yards. And I'm like, okay, game time. I go to draw back my bow. I can't draw my bow back. I'm too cold.
Oh my God.
Too cold. I got too much crap on. I could get it about three quarters of the way. And honestly, I thought about shooting from three quarters away because he was so close.
I just aim a little higher and hope.
Yep. No, I was going to aim down the shaft of my arrow and just treat it like a, you know, like a longbow, you know, but I'm like, oh, come on, I can do it. And then I couldn't do it. I was like, uh-oh. So I let down and then he popped his head and looked right at me. Right. And at this time, mm-hmm. Now I'm not trying to do a concealed draw because he's looking right at me. So I do one of these big sky draws, you know, like guys who are overbowed do, do one of those. And then he goes bounding off and he stops out there. I thought he was at like 70, but he was probably like 60, 65, maybe. I don't know, but I shot right over his back. I guessed him wrong, but, yeah, anyway, it was a slam dunk. I mean, he was a slammer buck. He was probably 175, chocolate horn,
woo!
Big wide buck, heavy, heavy, heavy buck. Anyway, but...
That's awesome.
Last year, I shot a really good buck. That was the year before.
Well, I may have to come hunt with you then next year. Do you have to draw that, or is that can you pay and go?
Okay, so you have to... draw the tag, but it's like a first come first serve. It's not what your traditional draw is. It's kind of like they just keep selling the tags until they're out. And
how do you do it? Do they do that on the internet, or do you have to be there?
No, on the internet.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's for an archery tag. It's fairly easy. Now, rifle tag is a straight up draw. You have to like put it in and
yeah, they can't tell too many of those because too many deer die.
You know, they give away quite a bit, but the thing is, they give away rifle tags in the rut, you know? And that's like...
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding.
Literally, the day that I leave, so we leave on the 16th, I think rifle season starts either the 14th or the 15th. But I always go right there on the fringe of rifle season. Sometimes I even go in rifle season because the neighboring properties are all bang, bang, pow, pow, and it just drives more deer into where I'm hunting. But it's prime time rut is the rifle season, so it's a very sought-after tag.
Can you bow hunt during the rut, or is it one of those that just close?
Nope, it doesn't close. So your bow tag, your bow tag's good from September 1st to January 1st.
Because I've heard of these. I've heard some. I'm getting used to all this Western stuff, draw and all this crap. I've never done it because I grew up in Texas my whole life and don't know any better and just uneducated. I am. And you know, there's places where it shuts. Like, you're thinking, wait a second.
Definitely not.
There
like
is
Texas.
A gun season, you know?
Yeah. And gun seasons are like a week long, and then another gun season. Like here in Arizona, matter of fact, I just did a podcast on it today. We have, for coos deer, there's early archery season from August to mid-September. Then you have first rifle season, which is late October, usually like the last week of October. Then you have a season that usually opens like the second week of November, goes for a week, then closes, then opens again for a third season.
Well, that's why my buddy moved there. And then he moved from Colorado because there's quail and javelinas and everything else. Colorado is real compressed. And if you don't have a bunch of money and a bunch of free time, you're screwed, you know?
Yeah.
Because you got to hunt. You only get to hunt when you get to hunt. It isn't very long.
You know, they got a pretty good archery season for elk. It's pretty long.
No, I know that, but I'm saying the rest of it's 5 days here, 4 days. You know, it's real compressed.
Yep.
But I understand Arizona. So if I buy my tag right now, because I'm going to come hunting in January.
Yep.
If I get it today, it starts today.
Your license starts.
My license is year round from the day you buy it. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, your hunting license.
And then if I shoot
separate,
if I shoot a deer in December arbitrarily, I'm done.
Okay, so if you come in December, you have to have a 2020 tag. But if you buy a tag in January, a 21 tag, okay, 2021 tag, that tag, if you don't fill it in January, say you come and hunt in January, you don't fill it.
Oh, I can hunt next fall.
You can hunt in August and then again in December. If you don't, you have three opportunities to fill the tag and you can only take one in a calendar year.
Because my buddy Chris was, he's drawing. He's getting points or something in Arizona for a certain place. It's not the Kaibab or something. It's something. He's got something spitballed with a friend of his. I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
And he needs some points, right? So he's sitting on them.
Yep.
And for some reason, he said, that's what it was. He said, I'm going to be terrible. I'm not shooting. No. It's either sex. It was real confusing because I think if he shoots a deer in January, he's done.
Yep. He is.
He can't draw the next year.
He could just put in for the bonus tag, bonus point rather, but he cannot draw. No, he cannot put it. He cannot apply for the draw if you shoot one in January.
But if he bought a tag right now and killed one in December, he could buy the January tag?
Yes, he could. It's another year.
Okay,
resets.
That's how it works.
So like a lot of guys will come if they want to kill two deer on a trip.
Yeah, you hunt December and January.
You hunt the last 5 days of December, and then you hunt the first week of January on two different tags. You got to purchase both tags.
Right, but you're out next December, so the state's got you. I mean, you can't get away with that every year.
No, you can't. You can do that like every other year. But if you're trying to, you know, for an out-of-state guy who wanted to parlay his, you know, driving and traveling expenses.
Yeah, sure, of course. Right. It'd be worth to stay 14 days, 21 days, and just get it done all at once.
Right,
and
you can shoot a javelina at the same time, two javelina. So you can shoot a javelina in December on the, or January actually, on the over-the-counter tag, which are good for metro units and a couple of other units that's included in there, but they're mostly the metro units. And then you can have a draw javelina tag, which is good for
So
whatever.
Can I shoot a javelina in Arizona when I buy my deer tag, or do I have to buy a javelina tag too?
You'll have to buy an over-the-counter javelina tag, and that tag is only good for like five or six units. I'd have to look it up exactly because it changed.
Yeah, it'll be fine. But I'm not really worried about it. I've shot a pile of them. I mean,
Yeah, I'm sure.
We used to flat kill them. I mean, they were just everywhere.
I can imagine. Texas, man. Different hunt, though.
Oh.
Completely different hunt.
Oh, I'll tell you a funny story. So we figured out how to just really kill them. Uh-huh. So, you know, we all corner roads because you can't go through the brush. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just not even worth the effort. It will eat you alive. And we went on this one place, and they had a truck with a 2-ton deal on the back of it and a spinner plate. And that dude would drive around his big diesel truck every day at 2 o'clock and feed the whole ranch. It was 10,000 acres.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Yep. And he had a route he went on. And then we would all feed the side roads and stuff. And then we went into camp. The guy said, okay, the guy's been feeding for 5 days straight. He comes by at 2 o'clock. And when he comes by, the road's going to turn black.
Yep.
And we said, great. And I'm not kidding, dude. That truck came down and it was just a mob. Deer, turkeys,
yep.
You know, pigs.
Ringing a dinner bell.
And javelinas everywhere because it's loud. The truck's loud and then,
right.
I mean, you can just hear it. Yep. And we figured out there were some places on the ranch where it was kind of open to the side. And you take your buddy and you have him go down and try to get even with them, and then get somebody to just walk right down the road as fast as they can.
Okay.
And you push them off the road and they stop about 20 yards away right in front of your friend and look back at you. And all you hear is fluke, fluke, fluke.
That's crazy.
Because your buddy's shooting the hell out of them. And then we call them a lot with jackrabbit calls, and that is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of calling for them.
You got to take somebody who's not scared of things.
Yeah.
The people get freaked out and start climbing up your back and try to get in your backpack. But for people that aren't scared of stuff, that is really fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
So if you haven't figured it out by now, or I'm talking to Troy Fowler, the ranch fairy. And this is actually our...
Educating him. Yeah, educating the ranch fairy on all kind of random stuff.
This is our second try at a podcast. And we've shared a bunch of stories and stuff together already here, but
first one was fantastic. I mean, it was unbelievable. I don't know if we're gonna be able to top it.
We're not. That's why I was so worried. Like I was devastated inside when I found out that did not record. I was like, oh my god. I said that was like one of the best podcasts because it was so just one. It was off the cuff, right? I didn't send you any questions. I didn't like prep you for anything. It was just totally off the cuff. And we gave out a lot of good information, at least I think it was, you know, or at least.
No, absolutely.
You know, what I feel and what you felt, you know, I think it was good. So we're going to try to replicate that. We'll see.
Yeah,
I mean, we were all over the place. We talked about arrow flight. We talked about broadheads. We talked about total weight, FOC, tuning bows, all that.
Absolutely.
So I think we should start with the tuning of the bows.
Yeah, I have a lot to learn. So that's something I want to talk to you about because I don't know anything about them.
I know
enough to be dangerous.
Me too.
But I don't know all the inner workings of the magic of the bow press and twisting this and flipping that. But I don't know. I don't know.
Honestly, I'm in the same boat. When I have to do that stuff, I default to the guys over at Arizona Archery Club. But when it comes down to once they get it tuned for me, and now what I've been doing the last couple of years is they've been doing a super tune. Okay, so which means is they get it paper tuned, I come in, and then they tune it to me the way I shoot. And if you want your best possible shooting bow, that's what you need to do. Because
so for everybody listening, I'm going to make this clear because I do understand this. I can buy a 300 Win Mag Remy 700 right now. Mm-hmm. We would glass bead the barrel because that's really cool. And we'd put a loophole VX3 on it with a drop compensator in it. And I would zero it. And I would ship it to John. Mm-hmm. And John would kill deer until he's dead and take it to the grave with him. As long as he didn't beat it up and knock it off zero.
Right.
He'd be fine to 300 with me shooting that rifle in. Bow and arrows are not.
Nope.
They are not like that.
Not at all. Not at all. Isn't that
they
crazy?
They are hyper custom, man. You cannot have somebody shoot your bow through paper, give you the paper, and say, bow is good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It is not.
You know what?
And I've talked to multiple companies. How can we tune a bow and do a package for average people who really don't know what they're doing? Right?
Right.
I don't know what I'm doing. I'm talking about people that really don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, most of us don't.
And nobody can give me the answer because there isn't one.
Right, because there's too many variables. You know, your hand, your arm, your eyeball to nose, your, you know, anchor point, the way you, how much tension you put, everything is different.
Well, it's also completely offhand.
Right.
I can count on one hand how many things I've killed offhand with a rifle, and most of that work has been done inside of 50 yards on feral hogs with a, you know, with an AR.
Right.
Although I've done a lot of offhand pig shooting with 12 gauges, and that is truly another fantastical deal.
Oh, I
get you a Benelli with a turkey choke in it and stuff it full of buckshot, and that is super fun.
I do that with coyotes a lot. That's one of my favorite things.
On coyotes, it's fantastic. Yeah. BBs or number twos or something, blow them down. But to everybody listening, bows are, you know, there isn't anybody out there that says, hey, just take an offhand shot at 300 with the old rifle you got there, buddy.
Yep.
Everybody's telling you to get a rest because it works. And bow and arrows are completely offhand. And none of us do the same thing human to human.
Right.
But I have noticed that whatever theoretical errors you make, people are very consistent.
Right.
So an individual tends to do the same thing.
Well, the guys that are world-class shooters, those are the guys that figured out how to replicate their shot process and their shot mechanics, everything about their shot, as close to a machine as possible. The bow's a machine. The bow's going to do the same thing.
That's correct. The bow's only job is to return to static state.
Right.
That's
it. It's a machine. It'll do the same thing every time, you know, to a point.
Right.
Actually, after every shot, technically, it gets a little bit different.
But compared to the human, no.
No, exactly. Exactly. So if you could replicate, that's why when people talk about form, like shooting form, yeah. I can't tell you how many guys have tried to correct me, you know. I'm not that big of a shot that people recognize me every time I go to, you know, go shooting or whatever. But
I think the top guys in the world are special.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just next level.
They are.
Baseball players, guys in the NBA, all that stuff. Listen, there's a bunch of 6 foot guys playing the NBA, not me.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And it sure as hell helps to be 6'8", which I'm not.
Right.
I was on another podcast with some guys, and the guy had been ATA Worlds and shot spots and was an indoor 300 guy and all that, right?
Yeah.
And the other guy almost made a professional baseball team, right? He got stuck in AAA like a lot of those guys do, and no opening came up in the bigs. If you're a shortstop, there's only 28 shortstops, and then they got backups, right?
Right.
And you can get stuck in the AAA or AA forever and never get drafted, and you're as good as anybody. But those people are physically different.
Yep.
And I think that we should be listening to the greatest shooters in the world, but we should also accept our own humanity.
Right.
And try to make ourselves as good as we can for the average shot bow hunting, which is still about 19 yards on whitetails, which is 90% of the game. That doesn't seem to have changed. I mean, I've gotten thousands of pictures this year and everything's under 25, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Especially
it's going to help the death.
With the setup that you're, you know, how you describe your setup to me and all that stuff, you're designed right now to take those, and you said at 40 and under.
Well, it's funny that we lost that podcast. So since that time,
mm-hmm.
you and I kind of discussed, hey man, is there a you know, long range arrow? Is there a short range arrow? You know, do I have too much arrow to shoot at elk at 65 or 70? And are you too light and all that stuff? Right, whatever. Mm-hmm. We didn't really go anywhere with that. We were just bantering back and forth about, we were spitballing stuff.
Right.
The more pictures I get, white-tailed deer specifically, yeah, I think there's an argument to go up in mass and shoot single bevels because they jump so much. And I don't know that your mule deer are moving at 65.
It depends. Depends.
Well, sure, but not the same as a, I think white, I don't see a lot of videos on Western game jumping like white-tailed deer do.
Yeah, mule deer can.
But I've not shot a lot of them.
Yeah, mule deer can act that way. It just depends really on the season. Like early season, they're going to jump like that. If it's during the rut, they tend to be a little bit full of themselves, you know?
Yeah, they just take it like a man.
Yeah, they'll sit there and take it like a champ a lot of times. I've seen them jump too. Like, okay, here's a perfect example. In South Dakota, 2 years ago, Charles, and he was shooting 570 grains, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He is, I think he's 28 inch draw. And he was shooting a Bowtech. Can't remember which bow, but Realm maybe. Whatever the bow was for 2 years ago. And the buck was facing at him? Yeah, was facing right at him, I think it was. and he shot, and it was a 50-yard shot. And by the time the arrow got to the deer, the buck had turned 180 degrees, and he literally shot his nuts off.
By the way, that's a devastating shot usually.
Yeah.
Not for the nuts, but usually that thing penetrates like crazy right there.
He ran. He bedded down. We watched him for a while. Didn't look like he was going to die, so we restalked him. Got him to 12 yards, but the way the aspect of the plan was, he just couldn't sneak another shot in there. Then the wind switched, the buck busted, and we never found that deer again. It was very,
and that's nothing. That's
painful.
Nothing you can't fix when they turn 180. I've had people shoot multiple West African species at water holes where there's leopards and stuff, so they're really on high alert. Hit the other side.
Yep.
Shoot at an impala facing the water, and he, by the time the arrow gets there, you shoot him on the other side in the armpit.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Because they're worried about their skin. Leopards that. And lions. And
I've man. Done that with antelope. I've done that.
Oh, pronghorns?
Pronghorns. Yep.
No kidding.
Yep. They react fast, especially on water holes. Super skittish on water holes.
That's just the stuff you just, I don't know. We're never going to beat that. If it, you know, your butt, maybe if your buddy was going faster, he shoots him quartering away and he kills him. Maybe he hits him in the ham and hits the bone and bonks him. Maybe. There's too many.
Right. There's too many maybes.
Right.
But I don't know. Like, I know my arrow was traveling like 20 feet per second faster. And if you go frame by frame and you watch and you count how many feet it takes for that arrow, because you can see the arrow traveling through in the video.
Yep.
Pretty sure the arrow is going to get there in time. And I had a similar scenario a few years ago here in Arizona. I was shooting one setup for 3 or 4 days. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to take out the other bow because just it's lighter. It's easier to pack around.
Mm-hmm.
But the first bow I was using was my 80-pound Wake. Okay. So that thing was screaming fast. I was shooting 500 grains.
Yep.
And just... it was like 20-something odd feet per second faster than the other bow that I took out. And I shoot at this mule deer, and the mule deer doesn't react right when I shoot. The arrow is like mid-flight, and then it decides to react, and it takes a jump forward, and I hit it square in the hip, right?
Yep.
Again, I went back to the camera, and I started calculating. I'm like, son of a bitch, if I would have stayed with the other arrow, or the other bow, that would have caught him where I needed to catch him. At least in the liver.
You think it would have been 2 feet further forward?
Yep.
Did you do the math on that?
Yeah, I did. We were going through and doing all the math on it. You know, it's so. This is like why the industry went to speed, okay? Because the whitetail guys were trying to talk about. There's a good video. There's a really good video on YouTube. I'll send it to you if I could find it. All this testing about deer dropping before the arrow gets there. And the guy does a really good job. I got.
Was it Grant Woods?
I don't remember who it was. I got to find it. But
in one of the videos, they did a graph and they measured gravity.
Yep.
So what? I don't give a damn about gravity. No. You know what the deer do? They spin, they roll, they tuck, they drop.
Yeah. Yes.
They stick their ass in the air and drop their head down. So on all the videos I've got, I can't figure out where they're going to go.
Yeah,
that's the trouble. So you just described two scenarios to me. You had one that was facing and took it in the pipe, and then you had one deer that was broadside and then took it in the hips because he went forward.
Yeah, usually when they're broadside, I find so of course this is all rule of thumb. You know, this is I was just talking about this with Joel Turner. We did a frontal shot a couple episodes ago. So
I'm a fan of the frontal shot.
So am I. Yeah, you and I talked about this too, I think, about pigs and how deer and the hips and all that. Yeah. So for me, if a deer, let's say a deer's quartering to me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, he's going to roll, he's going to turn away to the far shoulder of what you're...
Correct. Resulting in a gut shot.
Right. Okay. So when I aim, you know, I usually aim... And Joel and I were having this conversation that I had a picture of a dot on the neck, okay? And he was like, oh, how come you weren't, you know, you're not aiming, you know, whatever, 3 or 4 inches to the right? And I told him, I said, well, because if I aim and I aim here and he stays and he doesn't react, I'm still going to kill him.
He's done.
Uh-huh. Right? But if he does react, I'm going to still going to hit where I need to be. You know, there's a slight chance that he gets there, he gets really spun around, and I'm going to hit him in the clear, you know, clean in the shoulder. But if I'm shooting the right setup and I'm not taking a ridiculously long shot on that type of shot, I'm still going to get in there anyway. It's a deer.
I'm going to do a video on the quartering two shot, because when I started working with the guys at the Hunting Public and working with them, they get a lot of quartering two shots just by nature of what they do. Swinging out of trees, hunting on the ground. You got to shoot.
Right.
The deer comes by and that's it. That's it.
That's your chance. You know? Yep.
Right. I sit on bait. You just wait. They come in most of the time. This year I'm not hunting like that. I'm hunting in the boonies back in my saddle and trying some different stuff on the ranch. But usually we're on bait or on some kind of situation where they're going to be there a bit and you can get the right angle. Excuse me. You can get the highest percentage angle. Right.
Yeah.
But the greatest risk of the quartering two shot, and you described it to a T, is assuming they're going to stand still, which they never do. A whitetail deer never does. And I don't know that a lot of other game animals are going to, because their ears are forward. They're going to hear it coming. They're going to know something's up. I mean, they're going to get a full earful of the sound coming at them. When you shoot at a quartering two animal, the first thing you need to understand is you're going to not have a blood trail. You need to assume that responsibility as a bow hunter, because the arrow has probably a 90% chance of exiting in the guts. Yep. Because of the angle. And if you think blood is going to go through a sack of grass and there's this wall of meat in between the lungs and the guts called the diaphragm, and it is vertical, it is a curtain in there. Mm-hmm. And if you cut it on a mule deer like you're shooting, they're big animals. So let's just say you hit them perfect center, vertically center, take a lung out, hit the liver, cut the diaphragm out the guts. The blood's got to fill up
a lot of cavities.
8 to 10 inches to go through that hole, and it enters a sack of grass. There's no way it's coming out.
That's going to be
amazing. And I feel for all my broadhead vendors, because those guys' jobs are impossible. So we bow hunters go slinging around. You take a quarter and inch shot. It exits in the guts, and you expect it to bleed, which is physiologically almost impossible, and you blame the broadhead.
Yep.
Because you're being impractical. Or, you know what? There's a second piece of that. There's a ton of people who don't understand basic physiology. I have had medical training, so my brain works completely different. So the quartering two shot, in my opinion, should be a rigid blade, two blade head designed for the highest level of bone impact. And maybe you carry a quartering two arrow and you aim for the point of the shoulder, because that animal's probably going to move. And your description is perfect for me. And you can break things.
Yep.
It's also a very short distance to the highest vascularity in every animal in North America. Mm-hmm. If you shoot a broadhead that can do the work and not come apart and not dull, it's about 10 inches, and you are talking the front of the heart and the very large vessels entering the aortic arch and everything else, and it only needs to go in halfway. But it's got to break the bones. So you have a choice. You can shoot back with whatever broadhead you've got, accept that you're going to get one lung, liver, and out the guts, and live with it, and shoot them, and just know it's going to be a while, which I don't recommend, because I think it's been a challenge to find them.
Oh, yeah.
I get a lot of quartering two pigs. I just can't get people to wait, and a pig moves like a barrel. It don't bend in the middle, and it doesn't take much for them to be quartering two, and they have tiny little lungs, and I got them, you know. Perfect broadside, you show me the video, and it's, you know,
Yeah, exactly.
Just a little. I can see a little light between the back legs. That ain't freaking quartering, you know, that's not broadside.
Yeah.
And we've had trouble finding them.
Yeah.
I mean, we lost a bunch on that shot.
Yeah, so it's definitely one of those shots.
What you talk about.
It's definitely one of those shots that you, it's definitely not a higher percentage shot, especially.
I'm not against it. It's a very high percentage shot put in the right place with the right equipment.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not a high percentage shot for everyone. Is what I was trying to get at, basically.
No,
but
no, that's where the rigid two blade, really high durability broadhead can do that kind of work. It's an axe.
Yeah.
To do that kind of work, three blades struggle in bone just because they're kind of wedgy, mm-hmm. and the mechanicals have trouble just because they're so wide. I mean, they make a lot of contact.
Right.
They make a really broad impact zone. And it makes it really hard to to break things. But I think a quarter to two shot's fine. You just got to shoot around that spot. It's just physiology. I'm going to do a video on it and have some diagrams, and I think people are going to go, aha, because the lungs sit side by side, but when they're quarter and two, the offside lung is basically invisible to your arrow.
Yeah.
Because it's going at the back. And it's just it's a very difficult shot.
For sure.
Except for the right gear. I've started pounding a few, and the rigid two blade head, we've put some big ones on the ground, intentionally shooting them quartering in, and it just right through them.
Yeah, I tried to shoot that that hog in Florida that I was telling you about, quartering two, and not only, you know, it was just slightly quartering two. I was trying to get, you know, hit him in the shoulder. I was testing out the broadhead, so and he turned into it. Basically, I decapitated him, you know.
That's way better.
Yeah, he dropped like a sack of potatoes. But yeah, it's definitely way better. But
works.
You know, I got lucky because of that. But I was impressed at how much penetration would have.
I'm also a big fan of no tracking shots. Yeah. I mean, those kind of shots where you rock them and they go down.
Yeah.
People talk about that. They say, well, it didn't run, or, you know, or whatever. I don't know what happened. Wait, that's the best. So that you don't want a trail. You don't want a blood trail.
Yeah. But once
you don't.
I don't.
It's boring. Knock them over and let's do this thing, you know? Let's get to work, especially if you shoot an elk or something. I don't want to be chasing around on an elk for 3 hours and then have to haul him out.
Yeah.
That's already enough work.
My client this year, he shot his bull with a kudu point. And
yep.
We shot him at, he was like 18 yards. It wasn't a very long shot at all. But he got through this backside. It was like slightly, very, 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 almost perfect broadside, but slightly quartering too. So he caught the backside of the right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out through the muscles in the front leg on the left side.
Yep.
And then buried into the tree about 2 inches. It took us a little bit to get that out of there. And he ran about 45, maybe 50 yards, and he died. It was
those real, real forward shots are something too that I preach all the time. People say it's far forward. It's not. It's actually straight up the leg, lower one third is actually the center of the cardiopulmonary system.
Right.
It's not the back, it's not the front, it's the dead center. So then if the animal buries the shot 4 inches or something, you have this zone to play in there to give you some help. And then when you start shooting behind the crease, the lungs actually get very small back there. It's just physiology. And you're more likely to lung liver them, and it's just a longer day. But if anybody listening wants to find a book, there was a book written by an African guy called The Vital V.
The Vital V? Okay.
The Vital V, yeah. It shows every game animal in Africa. And if you go to Africa and you don't listen to your pH, you pay anyway. So when they tell you to shoot them forward up the crease and stay down low and you don't, and they run off, just hand them your money and reload. Those animals will haul butt on shots at their back.
Oh yeah.
They are gone. They're big, you know, and very, very, very durable. What do you do for, your normal tuning? So when you super tune at the club there.
Yeah. Well,
do you piddle with your arrows at all, or do you just choose an arrow and make it work?
So here's the thing. Like, I figured out a while ago, you could go down a rabbit hole in any direction. So it's always good to pick some kind of a starting point.
Yep.
And so for me, what I found over the years and through the testing that I've done, I'm a medium guy. I like medium weight arrow. I like to have fairly fast bow. I like my bows to be at least 280 feet per second.
Yep.
Okay. I feel like if you're, you know, 29 to 30 inch draw, you should be shooting at least 280 feet per second, and then kind of drop it about 10 to 15 feet per second per inch you go down. Okay.
Yep.
I find that if I have 16% FOC, I have
your arrow flight improves.
I have about the truest flight I can get. Okay.
Yep.
Is it the best penetrating? No. I mean, definitely heavier weight, more FOC is going to have more penetration, But yep. There's a give and take with everything. Like in engineering, especially, you always got to give up something to get something.
So, oh, yeah.
And really, I think what you need to do is you need to start with, how am I going to hunt? How am I going to, what ranges am I going to shoot in? What animals am I going to be chasing after? So me, I'm a generalist. You know, I hunt everything. I'm hunting elk, deer, you know, mule deer, antelope, bear, yep. Everything in the same year. And I don't like to change setups.
No, it's
I think it ruins
if you're doing tree stand work over bait, you can shoot 900 grand. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
You're right. It doesn't matter. But I like
for what you do, right. I understand. So, yeah, you don't want to change because you're used to shooting 70 or 80 yards, and that's precision right. work. So if you fiddle with it 20 grains, it makes it messes everything up.
Exactly. So for me, yep. I'm a 16% FOC. I like to be around 460 grains total weight on my arrow. I like to be about 280 feet per second. Those are my the guidelines that I start off with.
Yep.
And if I got to make changes, I got to make changes. But we talked about this last time. One of the things you need to do is if you like an arrow, you're confident with this arrow, take that arrow, screw in different point weights, see which one groups better. You know, there's a lot of different starting points you can start with, but if you don't have somebody helping you super tune or whatever. Anyway, so going back to your question, they paper tune it. I go in and I shoot it. We make adjustments on the top hats, you know, moving the cams, whatever, twists, doing all the little magical stuff that you talked about. Once that's done, I begin doing bear shaft tuning.
Mm-hmm.
And I bear shaft tune at two different yardages, 21 feet and then 15 yards.
Okay.
And then I will
check. Why do you have the second one?
Because.
Well, what did you see in your testing that showed you 15 needed to be done? And I'm curious because I'm getting ready to redo some videos and
I think
I'm trying to help people.
15
so.
Is, I think I do it at the 21 feet or 20 feet, whatever about that.
Yeah.
Originally, just because I make my macro adjustments there, but then I make my micro adjustments at 15. Because I found that if I do it at 15, I could shoot that bear shaft and
50.
I could shoot that bear shaft 40, 50 yards and it'd be fairly close enough that you would call it a kill shot. So once I get that all dialed in and I have my broadhead, a fletched field point on a bear shaft, all hitting the same impact point, then I'm considered my bow tuned to my setup.
Now I would agree.
Then everything else is you know, working with just the sight, you know, getting the sight dialed in and getting the pins dialed.
Do you intentionally flip broadheads around when you're piddling just to see if broadheads are a problem?
I guess
a better question is, do you think there are broadheads that are a problem, or when you get it to that level, does it matter?
There is some broadheads that are, and then those are the ones that are grossly obvious that they're not. I'm actually looking
at, what do you think's wrong with the broadheads?
I'm looking at one right now, okay? Since this is a Helix broadhead. And if I look at it, it's a knockoff. It's a Chinese knockoff.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the Helix ones do this or not, because I never looked at my Helix ones before I got rid of them.
I've shot that broadhead a freaking mile, and it shoots really good.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard that from everybody. That's why I want to make sure that no people don't think I'm bashing on them. You can see, if I look down the ferrule, okay, and the slot that's laser EDM'd out or wire EDM'd out, for this blade to fit into, and then you got the two set screws, right? Mm-hmm. I can see light coming through on one side and then none on the other. And these screws are tightened down all the way.
Yeah, so it's just inconsistent.
Right. So, you know, if they spin off, whatever, you know, those are usually the ones that are going to, you know, when I mean spin, when you spin them on a spinner or whatever, and you could see they're obviously out of round or, you know, whatever.
So then you think it's a manufacturing quality issue. It's not a broadhead type.
I mean, I haven't seen once I started, I used to think that it was a broadhead type, but after doing this last broadhead test, when I super tuned everything and then I first bend indexed every single one of my arrows.
Sure.
Okay. So here's a good example of that was before we indexed the arrows, I shot all these different broadheads and my group size at 60 yards with a hooter shooter. Okay. That's what a hooter shooter was like, bigger than a basketball. when I first bend indexed my arrows, which was the last bit of tuning, you know, of specialized tuning that I do, I reshot every one of those, same arrow, everything. And I just refletched them all, put all the same broadheads back on them. I was breaking knocks at 60 yards.
I have had a lot of people thinking that one broadhead shoots and another one doesn't. And I haven't, I'm not with them. So I don't know how much time they spend.
They don't.
Like you're talking about days of tinkering.
Yeah, this is a lot.
You're not talking about a couple, you know, an hour and a half in the backyard slinging it around. You're talking about days. And arrows, and especially carbon arrows, can be very finicky. But when you find it and you get it right, I haven't had any trouble.
Yeah.
I've got six broadheads in the quiver all the time. And I've shot them 100 yards.
Yeah.
And I
usually keep 200.
I mean, I know it's me. I mean, I know when I break a shot loose wrong and it hits a freaking foot right or whatever, it wasn't, the arrow is like a beam, just a laser just goes, choo, you know? Mm-hmm. I got people who tell me about this late yawing and 40 yards out there, the arrow's taken off to the left, but inside of that, they're not. And I'm like, I don't even know what that, I don't even know what that is.
That's all has to do with the fletching that you're running. I think a lot of people got, you know, they watch things on YouTube. They're like, oh yeah, I'm going to no helical. You know, I feel like.
Oh God, that's got to go away. You can't shoot a knuckleball. You need a little bit of rotation. There's gyroscopic effect. It's a fact with gravity and physics that spinning objects are more stable.
Yep. Well, I mean, think about a bullet. Okay. If you go shoot a heavy, let's say, all right, my 6.5 Creedmoor. Okay. If I was to go shoot a, I don't know, 100 grain bullet out of that. And I could get here's a perfect example. My 22 250, okay?
Yep.
It was a 1 in 10 twist, and it shot lights out, absolute lights out if I was using a 44 grain to maximum 50 grain bullet. As soon as I jumped up to that 66 grain or 65 grain bullet, it was freaking terrible. And
I got a little single shot 223. It's just a little Henry hammered. I call it the first gun. So it's for all my rookies. All the rookies, when they pull the hammer back, they know it's go. And when the hammer's down, nobody shoots anybody. So it's a really straightforward gun. It weighs 11 pounds. Yeah. It's a bull barreled 223 that weighs 11 pounds.
Jesus.
The thing doesn't move. You can shoot and watch prairie dogs explode in the scope. It's fantastic. And I desperately wanted it to shoot the X bullet because that thing doesn't stop. Mm-hmm. And it shoots three and a half inch groups with an X bullet. And then I get Hornady's American Whitetails and Interlock 55 grainer, and you shoot in the same hole. And it's a pretty good bullet. You know, it ends up in the skin on the offside of a deer. And I'm not shooting the barns because 3 inches with a rookie shooter is seven.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's terrible. It's not smart. It's the same thing with arrows. If you don't spend the time piddling around, keep jacking, keep tinkering, keep trying to figure it out. Right. That's why I try to develop my system, the system I come up with, because you're talking about having a bow tech and some guy who knows how to put the top hats, and then you show up and then he works with you. And that's a very rare service.
Oh, yeah. No. And people don't, and people aren't going to spend that money too. Like, I mean, that's 2 hours out of
That's correct. But I don't know a shop that'll do it with you.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's that many people that savvy in the shops. I don't know.
That's right? True. I've been in a lot of shops across the nation. There's a lot of shops that should not be servicing people's bows.
Well, it's fine. There's just no school for that. And says you're an MBA in bow tuning. I don't think, but.
There's some,
so I tried to come
schools.
Up with.
There's some schools.
Right. But average guy's just kind of a tinkering guy, got into it. He knows a lot, blah, blah, blah. And God help them. They're trying their best. I don't think they're trying to hurt you. They just don't.
No, it's not malicious for sure.
But. And I tried to figure out how, once again, back to my question of how can we tune a bow for somebody? And so, like the Elite that I just got, I got the Cure. Mm-hmm. It's got directions on it. That's why they sent it to me, because they know I'm not a bow guy. And it looks like a Denny's menu. So it says tail right. You just turn this knob and you turn the knob that way.
Right.
And it'll tilt the limbs or whatever. Well, I never did it. So it shot straight right out of the box. So I tell people, get it level, put the rest up, get the arrow level on the string. put the bow between your legs, rest up, look down the limbs, and make sure it's not cattywampusing off to one side or the other.
I mean, if
get a couple of bear shafts, most guys two different gonna... spines, and a bunch of different field points, and just try that first.
Exactly.
Because
see which one's
everybody working. Listening, yeah, when you change the point, you change the spine.
The more weight you got
and
up
it's
front.
Very incremental change. It's not, you're not changing it from 400 to 300. You're changing it from 300 to, you know, 322. It just gets a little softer. So for some guy who doesn't have a shop around, it's at least a practical starting point to try to tune it in. Yep. And you vary the point weight 40 or 50 grains, and usually people can figure out something that'll fly.
Yeah, I'd say
that. And I agree with your 16% number, too. 16% is when I first started seeing my arrows really behave.
Right. And you can get a lot of, you know, good flight out of the heavier FOC stuff. It's just you're giving up too much, in my opinion, for the way I hunt. You know, if I was doing what you're doing, 40 yards, man, I'd be shooting 800 grain arrows all day long. They're quieter.
No,
they're quieter, and they're gonna do the job no matter what angle you hit them at. You know,
is funny when you start shooting 700, you just go out there and you blow stuff down. I mean, it's just there's nothing you can't do.
You know, it's mind blowing that 1 ounce is what 430 grains or something like that.
What is?
Yeah, 437 grains is 1 ounce. You know, we always talk about grains, right? And everybody's like, shooting 550 grains. I'm shooting 600 grains. I'm like, that's awesome, dude. You're shooting an ounce in a quarter. You know, like we don't think about that. It's really not that heavy, you know?
Right. It's just amazing what happens when I really started tinkering with this, because I talked about this a lot on different podcasts and stuff. The reason why I started my channel was failing. Well, I was struggling. I mean, I was struggling shooting pigs, and I really like to shoot the big ones. Mm-hmm. And they're not normal. They're about the most durable thing, just the way they're built. The ribs are close together. They just get thicker. They don't have any lungs. Right. They're covered in mud. They're very dense, and they're extremely durable. And people say, well, they're just tough.
Yeah.
That is bull crap. Pulmonary tissue and hearts are not tough.
Nope.
The broadhead's got to get there sharp. That's all. It's got to get there and be sharp. And when I fell in love with hunting big feral hogs and really targeting the big males, which I probably get 5 shots a year at, the big ones, and I don't have a fence or any of that. It's just low fence, wild as hell. They run all over the place. I get piles and piles and packs of them, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've started passing and wait, like hunting big deer. I just let them go through and leave. And people are like, you don't just keep shooting them. I'm like, nope. I've become a big hog guy, and occasionally I'll shoot test pigs and stuff, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And when I first started getting serious about it, I was 50%, maybe less, on big ones.
Yeah, that's not a good percent.
Every broadhead, I changed everything. I'm just like everybody else. Get on the message boards. What should we do? What do you think the next thing is? This and that, mechanicals, cut on contact, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that blade erosion and blade destruction mm-hmm. was one of the highest contributors to my losses.
Oh, I agree.
The inability of the steel to handle hitting a mud coated thing, mm-hmm. penetrating 7 inches of pig before it hits the, you know, through the ribs. And I think they were flat because I got half an arrow into them.
That's pretty possible.
And a big one. I think it's a huge contributor because now that I've gone to 0.070 thick steel, stropped to, you trust me, don't lick my broadhead kind of sharp.
Right.
Shaving hair where the hair jumps off the blade, not sticks to it, but jumps off.
Yeah.
And it takes time, another art that takes hours and hours to learn. I am just whacking the hell out of them. And it's just a difference I've seen. And I really do think that the blade erosion is a humongous problem, that they can't survive the work it has to do, and you can't predict what you're going to hit when it hits the animal.
Right.
We talked about that at the beginning.
Yep. Yep.
Butt shots jumping forward, spinning around, ducking, weaving. 3D just makes you feel good.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Sure.
I mean, everybody's a freaking ace at the 3D range.
You got to build your system to what could happen, not what you want to happen.
Yeah, right. That's why I always call it a plan B error. Yeah. Build a plan B error. That's why we're talking about the quarter and two shot. Mm-hmm. There isn't serious argument for whatever broadhead you want to sling out there. That's fine. But if you're going to really hunt and think you're going to take a quarter and two shot, you should probably carry a one single bevel or rigid two blade that's very, very sharp,
mm-hmm.
that has the highest potential to break stuff.
Yeah.
I got lucky.
Yep.
Right? Yep. But just stack the odds. Like the head you're telling me about, we were discussing last time, that you're designing or piddling with, mm-hmm. makes complete sense. It's not huge. It's going to be sharp. It's got little tiny bleed blades on it. It's not going to have a lot of resistance, and it's not going to crumple.
You need that. Penetration's king, really.
Absolutely. And then when you hit a bone,
the more shit you could go through, the better off you are, you know?
Yeah, I did a podcast on a pig I called Nervous Ned, and he busted a bunch of people. And for a 100-pound pig, he was way too smart. So I decided to kill his ass because they're already smart enough. I don't need to be messing with it. And then he would circle way out. I almost took a rifle and killed him just to get rid of him. And he came in on me, and I shot him about 17 yards with about a 525 grain arrow with a single bubble four blade on it.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a Cayuga or something like that. It was a small bleeder blade, four blade, I mean, single bevel though.
Uh-huh.
And I aimed at his armpit, and by the time when the arrow hit him, it hit him in the dead center of the stomach, and he was pointed straight away from me, and the broadhead stomach, liver, lung, broke his spine and went into his ear. And he went down like a sack.
I bet.
Right. But I measured. And if I would have only gotten 8 inches of penetration, mm-hmm. I would have been gut, liver.
That's it.
And that pig's not going to bleed.
Yeah, he's going to die, but you're not going
to. He's going to die. He's going to die. He's going to go a long way, or he's going to be able to. You'll go stomping around the brush at night and he'll run off. Mm-hmm. The arrow may come out, but once again, his guts are full of grass.
Yeah.
But because I penetrated 22 inches, I broke his spine. Gotcha. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's still got lung. It severed his it cut his trachea, piece out of his trachea, and then broke his back.
Right.
And still had enough pop to come out at 525, right? And I shoot some outrageous weight. 740 is what I'm running right now.
Right.
And
525 is a good weight.
Yeah, right. 525 to 550 flying perfect with a real broadhead on it is a fantastic all-around arrow.
Yeah.
My son shoots it. My buddy Chris Griego shoots it. It just tunes out nice. It's not too, they're not too picky. You could shoot. You can overspine that arrow a little bit and still shoot fine. You can underspine a little bit and that arrow will still shoot fine.
Yeah,
because the point's not overwhelming it, you know.
If I didn't hunt the way that I hunt, if I could shoot a bow that's fast enough that I can get 280 feet per second, 500 grain, I'll do it. But the reason why I don't shoot that heavy is because I feel like I do most of my work at 60 and 70 yards. I'm just not that sneaky. I just needed to work on my sneaking ability, I guess. But I feel if I was limiting myself to under 50 yards, I would shoot that weight all the time, you know?
And I guess you're not having any penetration issues or anything out there at 70 yards.
I'm not.
Great.
If I make a good shot, you know, the only animals I've ever lost, you know, you hear guys who lose animals all the time that make good shots. And the only animals I've ever lost were ones that, you know, I hit them shitty, like really shitty, like in the ass or whatever, you know, real low.
They bounce bad. They freaking go nuts. They flip on you or whatever.
You know, hit a branch and it tumbles and hits them sideways or
yeah.
Hit them low in the brisket. Like those are, I've never, knock on wood, I've never made a good shot and lost an animal. Now, like, so perfect. For instance, my cousin Anthony, I was telling you this, I think the other day, but he, for whatever reason, he switched back over to shooting a Rage broadhead for his archery elk hunt here in Arizona. And yep. I was like, please do not shoot that freaking broadhead. Please don't.
Yeah.
But he was like, he didn't have time to retune his bow and he was having some tuning issues. So, and like most of the country that doesn't know how to tune their bow, that's why you shoot mechanicals, you shoot stuff like that because they're plug and play.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he shoots this elk broadside, with the Rage, And he's a 27-inch draw, so he's not a real long draw. And his total weight on the arrow, I think, is 446. Yep. Not super heavy. But he's up in spine for what you know, he's shooting a heavier spine. He's got good FOC. You know, he's probably around 17%, 18%. You know, so he's got the goods to do it, shooting 68 pounds or something like that, 65, 68, can't remember. But he shoots this elk at broadside at 40 yards and gets 5 inches of penetration.
I know. You have to tell me.
I mean, absolute perfect shot. You couldn't ask for a better shot. 5 inches of penetration. One lungs him. The bull is hurting. He doesn't run off. He walks off coughing.
Yep.
My cousin puts another arrow in him at 100 yards just to, you know, stick another hole in him, hits him in the neck.
Yep.
Still doesn't run. And decides, okay, let me just let him go and I'll blood trail him. The blood trail is awesome for that first, you know, 150 yards, then just goes dry.
Yep.
He ends up recovering this elk 2 days later or 3 days later. He one lunged him. That elk got a mile away. A mile. He went a freaking mile, you know?
All day long, man.
And if he would have been, he would have been better off if he shot him with a field freaking point. You know,
there's a very good possibility that is true, because an elk is 5 inches thick, easy, just to get to the freaking thoracic wall.
Yeah. So
that's one thing people don't do. When the next time you guys kill a big animal, just take some time to grab, find out how thick it is between the hair and then to get through the ribs. I mean,
oh, yeah.
just take some time in your head and then measure across the thoracic cavity of an elk. Mm-hmm. It's got to be 16, 17 inches wide. Once it breaks the first rib cage to get to the middle of the second lung.
Yeah.
Then you add that to the backside of your arrow, and you got to get 27 inches of penetration to hit the other side of the ribs. You got to hit the fletch on a 28-inch arrow has got to be almost touching the hide to hit the other side of a bull elk.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not even trying to be an ass about that. Go measure it next time you kill a bull elk. They're big.
Yep. It's no joke. It's the absolute truth. I went red stag hunting. I had some issues, which made me relook at some of my setup this past March. Those are the toughest animals I've ever shot, man. Tough is tough, 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 because their ribs are closer together. Their bones are denser. The biologist there told me, I'm like, oh, but I shoot elk all the time with this setup. Matter of fact, I shot one at 83 yards. I told him the story. And he's like, you don't understand. Even though this animal is a couple hundred pounds smaller than an elk,
you're built like a tank.
It's the bone density is like 45% denser bones. So when you hit the ribs, you're hitting harder out. Like, they're closer together. The hide is, you know, is like matted and gnarly, kind of like, you know, what you deal with when you shoot a pig that's been rolling.
That's the stuff nobody really knows and what you're getting into. It's like going to Africa. Those things, their skin is nasty.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. So it ruins the broadhead just going through that first.
Like I said. Yep.
So anyway, so yes, I agree with you. Very sharp, rigid, good penetrating broadhead is essential.
The sharp is the next thing I'm going to be ranting about on my channel and trying to get people to pay attention to. We did a sharpening video with the Hunting Public, and it's gotten you know hundreds of thousands of views.
I saw that video actually.
I've had a lot of people, you know, who say, "God, I figured it out." You know, I figured it out, and they went from okay to good Lord, you know, sharp.
Yeah.
And people, you know, whoever's listening, you don't understand physiologically how important that is. This is the facts about broadheads. Broadheads either remain static state or they erode. There is no sharper when it hits something.
Right.
Completely impossible. And then if you're shooting a rig like John's shooting and it's going 280 feet per second and slams into a bone, the erosion possibilities of stuff that's under 0.05 thick and not sharp and not good steel
is
contributing to long, to very, very long days.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I mean, it's one of the things I've seen. I'm also going to be discussing shooting stock inserts and 200 grain points a lot this year. Mm-hmm. everything I've put my hands on that's 200 grains is awesome. The steel's better, the iron will, stuff like that. I mean, instead of beefing up your inserts, which I don't believe matters as much now that I've piddled with them, beef up the broadhead because it's what hits.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate with you on that.
Yep.
Okay. I purposely just designed some outsert insert because I've had some failure in the past, but that's not really why. The thing was, is that most of these broadheads and broadhead companies, they design their broadheads at the 100 grain and then everything else is an afterthought. Okay.
Right. Because that's where they sell. Exactly. It's just a P&L decision, right?
Exactly. Yep. So in order for me to get the flight and the precision and the amount of drag and cut and blah, 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 and everything else that I've figured out over the last couple of years, you usually get that in the 100 grain. Sometimes the 125 grain is the better one. And
but you're adding insert weight or are you shooting stop?
No, shooting insert. All right, my insert. So my insert setup is 75 grains total. Okay, my insert
is it aluminum and really long, or is it steel? No. Or
it's a long aluminum insert that's 25 grains, so it's not super.
I like
long,
that,
and it's high grade.
Yep.
And then I shoot a titanium 50 grain collar.
Are you shooting a hit? Are you hit with a collar, or are you shooting the regular over the top?
No, okay. I shoot the gold tip Pierce Platinums.
Oh, okay. Actually, that's a great head. That's a great arrow. Yep.
This year I switched to the Tours, but I don't know that I'm a good enough shooter to warrant shooting that arrow.
Because I did, when I first started playing around with this stuff, I didn't have, this is before inserts were really something. The only thing you could find was brass for the standard gold tips and stuff, because I don't know why they had them, right? The target, we all know the target guys shoot a lot of forward to center because they are target guys and they're worried about precision, but don't talk about that.
Yep.
So they also shoot really long bows, mm-hmm. which is something we need to fix too. Short bows suck, but well, that's another topic for another day. For the average guy, when I first started out on this, I shot a pig with a 600 grain broadhead with an aluminum insert, and guess what? It hit the dirt.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't do anything else. And I have bent as many inserts of all types of steel equivalently. And it's mostly because I've anchored it in the offside shoulder and the pig or whatever's running with it. Mm-hmm. And they're not designed for that lateral pressure, right?
No.
I've not had one bounce off and be bent, right?
Right.
So I'm really going to start talking about this, but a very high, much higher grade, heavier broadhead, lighter insert system, same weight. Mm-hmm. Again, back to the courting two shot and all that stuff. We need to start building broadheads, not because people want them a certain weight, to do whatever they need to do. Because you can lighten up your insert and put the 200 grain broadhead on there mm-hmm. and go nuts. It'd be the same arrow.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm running 175 grains up front. That's
right. So close enough. But I'm just saying, you follow what I'm saying, up the broadheads, increase the steel. Higher quality steel, something that can really handle. Well, first of all, it can physically get sharp. I've messed with some of the 440C stuff, which is the most common steel that seems to be punched out. Seems like it presses out nice and blah, blah, blah. And you really, it's hard to sharpen. It's very finicky. It's not as easy to sharpen as a real good high carbon, hard, high Rockwell steel to me.
Gotcha.
You just have to not push on it as hard.
I haven't done a whole bunch of the sharpening stuff. I've messed around with it here and there, but I haven't.
You get your hands on, like this stuff Bill makes at Iron Will or Wojo's Tough Head or some of the other higher grade steels that those guys are running.
Yeah.
And take it and strop it out where it'll cut paper real nice and shoot it through a piece of particle board about four times. It'll still shave. Whereas some of the other broadheads just erode. And that just contributes to losses. Or actually, it contributes to possible losses and very long nights. Never seems like a long day. You always hit a bad one in the afternoon.
And not the truth.
I guarantee you, 90% of them are always in the afternoon. Of course, I think the public land guys, it's probably 50% afternoon or more hunts because it's easier to navigate. Like the public whitetail guys. Mm-hmm. It's just easier to get there without stumbling around and falling down half the time in the dark.
Yeah.
But it's just my spitball on that.
For sure.
But I have seen, that's one of the changes I have made and been fortunate to have people send me their stuff, and I get to tinker with a lot of things. And when I start messing with 0.06, 0.0506, 0.07 steel that's high grade stainless or high carbon, oh my gosh. You shoot through a pig or a deer, it goes in the dirt, you pick it up, and it'll just about shave.
Yeah.
That's really good performance.
Yeah, for sure. Now,
it's just overlooked.
I definitely think that, and you're starting to see it, you're starting to see a shift in the quality of stuff. You know, guys are starting to realize that it makes sense. That's why Ironwheel is doing as well as it is. You know,
people need to start buying $500 bows and $400 worth of arrows and broadheads perfectly tuned. That's what needs to happen. There ain't a bow on earth to kill the damn deer on the planet. That's a fact. Bows don't kill nothing.
Right. Yep.
The arrows do, and they've got to survive. You know, they've got to survive. Yeah. The game has become so much more simple once I started taking records and testing and doing this and doing that and taking dumb shots. And then I have the advantage of having a bunch of nephews, so they don't have any money. So they've all got hand-me-down, you know, old Matthews I've had or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the bows shoot good and the arrows shoot good, but they don't know what the hell they're shooting.
Right.
Because they don't have any money. And so you give it to somebody who's that uneducated at the sport, and that's when you start to see results because they're flinging them all over the place. You know, they're not good shots. They don't practice. They go to college. They drink beer for practice. And then they come to ranch and shoot 15 times and go hunting, right? I think they're a pretty interesting subset of our whitetail world of people who just want to go shoot a deer once in a while.
Right.
They're not, you know, nerd level like us.
Yep. There's the full-time hunters and then the weekend warriors and, you know. Or the guys.
Well, I'm here to try to help the weekend warriors. If I can set up a system to help them, if I can get somebody to get their broadhead groups from 6 inches down to 3, we've done a 50% service to the industry.
For sure.
And then if I can get their arrow flight down and make it kind of simple with kind of a redneck way to do it, that it takes a couple of hours maybe, and then get some real broadheads, we're all the weekend warriors. And there's just a lot of people who are busy and three kids and real job. Yeah. And
exactly. They don't have the means or the time to do it. You know, time
mostly
precious.
Time. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember 10 years ago when I was coaching my son's travel baseball team. It was 4 days a week to practice. My other son's a skater and competing on the weekends, and my daughter played volleyball. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, my kids are grown now. I'm going to the ranch tomorrow on Wednesday. You know.
Awesome.
That was not the case 10 years ago.
That's awesome. Well, man, I feel like we could sit here and ramble at the listeners for a long time. We got a lot of stuff to say. I'm definitely going to come get you back on, and we'll
do that. We'll do a springtime thing, and we'll chit chat about some other stuff and see what's going on and recap your seasons. You know,
yeah.
Do some analysis of that and all that good stuff. So, thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate your opportunity.
Thanks.
It's a great conversation, man. We both have the same goal. We're trying to help the damn sport grow and get people to whack them.
Exactly.
I don't really care about me anymore. It's more fun when I get pictures in and say, hey, Dad, you know, I did what you said. I got the 525. My broadheads were sharp, and this deer didn't run.
Yeah.
That's when it's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, I live that. I've
already killed about 1,000 deer this year.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Nice. All right, man.
Well, have fun.
Thank you, and we'll talk about getting together and doing that testing in spring, like we talked about. And and I'm sure I'll talk to you before the end of the season, anyway.
All right, man. Well, have a great day. Thank you for your time, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yes, sir. Bye.
Bye.